You're listening to the extended version of the Marku 42's Universe podcast.
Marku 42 Universe.
Hi, I'm Fraser Koo from Cops and Monsters.
And I'm Innes Anderson, also from Cops and Monsters.
And you are listening to Marku 42.
Welcome to Marku 42's Universe here on Subspace Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Baumgarten, and with me today are...
Eduardo and Fryer.
Hey, Ed, what's going on?
I keep getting asked how much I sacrificed for this thing, and I sacrificed everything.
You know, I've been rebelling about doing this show the whole time. Anyway, who else do we have?
Vicky Jacobowski.
Hi, Vicky.
Hi.
How was your trip that you just got back from?
I just got back from Bantu, and it was fabulous.
Did you have any blue milk?
No, I don't like the blue or the green milk, but, you know, I don't mind drinking out of a porg.
All right. And finally, we have...
Zion Kuros.
Hey, Zion.
Hi.
What's going on?
Besides hiding in a hole for 5 weeks with Saul Guerrero, nothing much.
Wow, folks, as you can probably tell from what we're talking about and joking about, we are reviewing Star Wars Andor this week. Yes, the 12-episode season one of the hit Disney Plus Star Wars show has concluded, and we are reviewing it. And Vicky and Zion are going to lead our show today. So let's take it away, Vicky.
Well, hello, hello, hello. Oh my gosh, I don't even know where to start. There's so much that happened in these 12 episodes. This was one of the longest, this is the longest series, other than some of the animation series for Star Wars. It was jam-packed, amazing cast, amazing cinematography, amazing art, amazing everything. I'll be honest, I'm a little at a loss of where to start because there's just so much, except that, guys, how much did you love this?
Oh, I loved it. I was a big fan of it. It took me, you know, I watched the first episode and I was like, eh, but I realized something after I watched the third episode. That was why they dropped three episodes at once, because they wanted you to get in. You had to get to the third episode to get the pace and where the story was going to go. So it was all a prologue. And by the way, if you count those three episodes as one episode, it was a 10-parter, which kind of matches some of the other Star Wars series.
Ah.
Just pointing that out.
I guess.
What do you guys think?
You know what? This has to be one of the best Star Wars series that have been on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And not, you know, not counting Clone Wars or anything that they absorbed when Disney bought Star Wars, but as far as the input that they put out, this has to be one of the best, like at least top three.
Gotcha. Zion?
You know, I'm going to take it a step further and say that this is the best thing they've ever put out, and it's not even close. And it's not even just counting Star Wars. This is the best thing that they've put out since Disney Plus has been made.
Whoa.
That is not the first time I've heard that statement from somebody either.
It is so good. Like, it's mind-boggling how good it is. The way how they set it up, right? Like, in fact, it's funny because we didn't know where exactly to start. I'm going to start exactly where the show started, where it tells you exactly what it is. This isn't your grandpa's Star Wars. This is this is something else because we're starting in a brothel, right? Yeah. We are in this era of what Obi-Wan called the dark times. This is the dark times. This is closer to 3 than it is to 4. So like this is the more of where the Empire is literally the Empire, right? And you see it. And as soon from the jump, everything sucks.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the one of the things that I like about this series is that, yeah, while they had mentions of Vader and the Emperor, they're off screen.
Right.
They're just this off screen boss that you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, we got to make sure the Emperor's happy because he's not happy about what happened on Ferrix. You know, these are people who are living day to day. You know, they don't know spit about Jedi. You know, all they know is, hey, I've been, you know, I'm living day to day with freaking, you know, the Imperials looking over me. You know, it's like, pick your poison of what, you know, it's like, oh, you know. And then even one of the things I love is that the villains or the antagonists were so, it's called punch clock.
Uh-huh. You know,
these aren't, I mean, for all the mustache twirlers that we had.
They were corporate 101.
Yeah. They were 9-to-5ers. I mean, I think what to me like really encapsulated that in the first 3 episodes is when Karn wanted to investigate the two officers that Andor killed, and his boss is just like, I'm about to leave. I'm about to leave on a business trip. You know what? Let me take a look at this. Look, just write this, this, and this. Okay, this guy that got killed, I know him. He was a troublemaker. You know, let's just, anybody asks, he got what he deserved. You know, don't, you know, we're too, you know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't ruffle feathers. It's just, you know, something bad happened. Oh, well, too bad. So sad. You know, we feel sorry for the wife and kids. Move on.
Of the Empire and the pre-rebellion. Yeah. What was that, it like to be a normal person that was either, either with them or with them or not? And so it's very interesting. This is what it really looked like. This is what it really felt like.
Also, to be
a person in on a planet run by the Empire and how crappy it really was.
Well,
and
there was also that. There was also the female officer, the one who keep losing her. You know, she walks into a room and the subordinate she's talking to, he had his tunic open. He was just leaning back. You know, he was basically acting like the boss is not around.
Right.
And then she shows up and it's like, let me get busy.
Button up.
Okay, button that up. Hey, hi. Oh, good to see you, Lieutenant. What can I do for you? You know, it's like, get Galaga off the computer screen.
Right.
And that feeds into just how the overall environment is. Like, you can tell here at ISB, everyone's shooting for the top. And no matter who gets thrown in into the fire, I don't care as long as I reach the top. And then it's really cool to see that buddy of heads, especially since like this is like the first time we've seen ISB. Like we've only got a mention of them through Agent Kallus in Rebels. Like really, we've only seen their agent, not the actual ISB itself. So it's kind of interesting to see how like it's more like a Secret Service type thing.
Right. Well, also, I mean, the other thing, it's funny that you bring this up, Zion. The other thing is that in Karn and the Imperial Officer, we had two of kind of the same path, just different outcomes. Karn was all about, I am showing that I'm responsible. I'm doing this, you know, I'm doing this the right way. I'm responsible.
I'm a good officer. I will get promoted.
Yeah, well, he's like, you know, we can't just let this slide. That's lazy. That's not the, so I'm going to investigate, you know. And then what happens is he gets smacked down. You know, he gets like, dude, we told you, leave it alone. You know, what happened? You got all these guys killed. You know, what is your problem? You know, then you have the female officer, and I keep losing her name, and I feel so bad about it. You know, she shoots her shot, and what ends up happening, she ends up, she shoots her shot and she's like, oh, you know, she actually like, your superior's like, you know what? That is a good idea. I'm going to let you investigate this sector. I'm going to let you investigate Ferrix. Let me know what happens.
Mira? Where... Yeah, Mira.
Yeah, Mira. See, yeah, and of course, you know, the guy who tried to, like, throw her under the bus is like...
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's interesting when you see the dynamics and the cutthroat. Yeah. I mean, it feels like corporate 101. I mean, it could be any corporate, any major corporate, you know, Fortune 500 company here in the U.S. Just, you know, all the junior officers are in it for themselves. Who can get promoted first? Who can throw everyone else under the bus? Blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And, you know, and then the superiors are like, okay, we're going to let her run with it. If she does well, we're going to take credit for it. Duh. And if she sucks, that's okay. We're just going to say, well, you know, she was kind of rogue. And it was fascinating. And I don't remember if it was the second or third episode that I was like, oh my gosh, I think I worked for this company. I think I worked for this company 20 years ago. And it just was like so, it felt so real. And I think that's one of the reasons it was so wildly popular. Because, I mean, aside from the fact it was really good, but it was so identifiable. And one of the things that struck me probably about halfway through, you know, being Polish, and it really struck me always with rebellions and stuff, you know, back in 1980, when we had the Gdansk ship workers rebelled against, and we had the September 1st uprising and Lech Walesa, you know, and then he became the first president of the new formed Poland. But then he was like, well, what do I now do? He was a great rebellion leader, but how did he become there? And then what did he do afterwards, and how he struggled afterwards? And I've always been fascinated with those stories because I've seen them in my own history. And I felt like this was a similar story. How did we get to, because we know who Andor is in Rogue One, but how did he become that person? Well, now we're finding out how he became that. We're actually learning how the rebellion became the rebellion, because by the time, you know, in 1977, when Star Wars came out, we had a pretty well-organized rebellion. But no rebellion starts off organized. Rebellions start off ugly. They're difficult. They're problematic. How do you get there? And, you know, it's never pretty. It's always ugly. It's always the things are not clean, you know.
Well, also, you have, like, you know, a great example of that is the character of Luthen.
Yes.
When talking, there's Luthen, and then there's also Mon Mothma. Because Mon Mothma is all about, you know, Mon Mothma is trying to, you know.
She's trying to do it from both sides.
Well, and she's trying, what she's trying to do, she's trying to do the little, you know, the little things, you know, the funnel money and, you know, and tie stuff up in the Senate. And Luthen's like, no, man, we gotta go hard. You know, we gotta go hard. It's like she got upset about the theft, the money theft. And he's just like, and it's just like, they're gonna come down even harder. And he's like, oh, good. 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 This is what we want.
You know, I'm glad that you brought him Mon Mothma, because, like, this is the first time in, like, since 77 that's brought up the Imperial Senate that we've actually seen the Imperial Senate.
Yeah.
And that's kind of weird. Like, once you actually see it and you compare it to the Republic Senate, it's really interesting. You have people like Mon Mothma speaking all about liberty and justice and such, and the old place is just roaring with applause. Mm-hmm. And then now you get here, and Mothma's speaking the same stuff, and she's getting booed off.
Yes.
Literally, or ignored. Booed off.
Or ignored. It's crazy. No one is in there. Like, someone said that that the Senate up until like four is just a formality. And now you actually physically get to see it, and it's really cool.
Yes.
Oh yeah, no. And it's
the apathy, the rubber stamping essentially that it is. So even before it's disbanded, which of course it is, because we hear that when Darth Vader is talking to Princess Leia in New Hope. And but before that, you know, we knew it was falling to pieces. And, you know, somewhere between episodes 3 and 4, the dynamic had changed. Everything was changing. We get little bits of it in some of the animated series. But this kind of gives you how much of a rubber stamp it truly had become, and how much of a scary prospect. And so anyone who is familiar with democracy and the way that a republic or a democracy or any form of government that is supposed to be related to the people as opposed to a dictatorship or some other form of, you know, truly voted on government. I mean, that's what it became. It became a puppet government. It was there in name only. And the fact that she was talking, but nobody was really there, either physically or in
mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mentally, spiritually. Yeah.
That and it was such a heart-wrenching scene, so short, but so telling of what the world had become. So even her trying to get in politically and trying to change things politically, it was very clear that that was not going to be an option much longer.
No.
And no. And it's funny because, like, if you watch Star Wars Rebels, which takes place after this, right?
Right.
She's still trying to do things by the book, and still all the way up until I think Rogue One, she's still trying to do things by the book, and that goes to show, like, she's literally the last relic of the old Republic.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's just truth and justice. It's while really, everyone around just came around and said, this is how the galaxy is either we face up or we do nothing.
Yep. Well,
kind of makes that short speech she gives towards the end of A New Hope. It now almost makes it sound like you can hear her having given up any vestiges of the past. When she's when she's talking about getting the plans and what needs to be done, it's a very short speech. But now,
Are you talking about the one in Jedi?
No, the one in No, it is the one in New Hope.
Wait, no, she's not in New Hope.
Am I really this tired?
Sorry, it's a 12-hour
drive. I think it may have messed up my head.
You're fine. She shows up first in Return of the Jedi, and she shows up in Rogue One.
Oh, that's right.
She also shows up briefly in Episode 3.
Yeah.
That's right. But it is. It does make that speech so much more poignant, because now it sounds sad.
Yeah. Well, and also, it's like more she... Sad. Yeah. You know... But it's interesting, because you get a little bit of it. You get, like, a tiny vestige of it in I think it's the last episode.
Yes.
Where she's she's chatting with her, you know, she's chatting with her husband, like, oh, you've been gambling again.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, and you have
she knows what she's doing. She knows what's coming up.
Yeah, because basically she's what, you know, you get the idea, she knows she's being spied on.
Well, yeah, she said that at the beginning, yeah. Okay.
But the fact that now what is she doing?
She's setting everything into place.
Yeah, and she's giving her daughter. It's not just the daughter. My thing is the fact that she knows her chauffeur is spying on her. So that conversation that she has with her husband in the back seat, it's like, oh, you're gambling again. She's feeding him little bits. She's like, oh, you're the little spy that I've been given. Here, let me throw you a bone so you can go back to your masters and be like, hey, look what I found out, you know. And
it also explains some of the money changing hand, the money movement.
Well, see, that's
I think he wasn't gambling. I think she made that up because he kept buying it.
I think it was before, because there was discussion. But
I don't think at that time he was. No, I think
you're right.
Mark, you're actually proving the point I was going to make, which was she basically, I mean, for all intents and purposes, she threw her husband under the bus.
Yes.
Because she is now using the fact that she's being spied on. She's using her spy to screw up the people who are spying on her.
Yeah, I agree. Yes, definitely.
So that cynicism is now, she's getting on the road to it because she's like, I'm going to throw my husband under the bus and, you know, I'm going to like throw, you know, I'm going to use my daughter. You know, it's like, hey, why don't you go date this little kid because I'm in business with her dad. So, you know, it's, yeah, that cynicism has already begun.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't, you know, we don't like, it's not, trying to think of the right word for it. It's like it's already begun. It's just not, you know, we're not completely there yet, but she's starting to realize it.
Right.
It's
a shame.
Say something about the actress because the way that you can still see hope in her eyes when we first see the character. And by the time we get to the last episode, there is something in her eyes. I swear she looks like she is on the brink of breaking down. That entire last episode, you see it in her eyes. And to me, that is a mark of an extremely good actress because I believed her. And, you know, I am a mother. And, I mean, the fact that she is sacrificing everything, her family, her husband, her life, everything. And of course, we started this conversation with sacrifice. And everybody sacrifices in this show.
Yeah.
Sacrifices are great and horrible and wonderful. And...
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, Lucien said it. He said it, you know, when he's talking to that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yep, this is what it's going to take. This is what it's like, you want to, you know, it's like, I'm not, you know, it, the fact that he gets, you know, he gets insulted when he gets called out and he's like, dude, you have no freaking clue. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. You have a kid, Mazel Tov. I don't have, you know, oh, you have a wife to go home to. Yeah. I don't, there's my assistant, but yeah, I don't think I'm going to get the time of day from her. So it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's all about, yeah, a lot of people sacrifice and then some, yeah.
Is so powerful and blows my mind. And I've seen a lot of other people mention it and talk about how truly powerful it is because not only are we having to play dirty, yep. As a rebellion to become a rebellion. Not only are we having to use some of the same tactics, and not only are we going to have to sacrifice our own to be able to move forward, and we have no choice. But, you know, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for the people who come for me.
Yeah.
I don't get to enjoy that sunset. Someone else is going to enjoy that sunset. That speech... Gotcha.
It was an important speech, yeah.
Yep, and it kind of reminds me, it actually reminds me a little bit of the movie Serenity.
Yeah.
You know, the one that was a continuation of Firefly. There, the operative, you know, in talking to Mal, you know, he's like, you know, he talks about, you know, how he's making a better world, and then he even acknowledges, he's like, no, and it's not for me.
Yeah.
You know, even he, you know, I mean, because we've seen this before in like another franchise, you know, that it's not, yeah, he's not, you know, Lucien's not doing it, you know, Lucien's not doing it because he's, you know, he's doing it because, hey, this is, you know, yeah, I realize that I'm, you know, I'm being the monster, you know, I'm being the monster for the side of good.
Right.
Pretty much. Like, that's pretty much what he's saying. You know, yeah, I'm a monster, but. You know, I'm willingly becoming the monster because that's what we need.
You know what? I have to be the monster here, folks. No! I hate to do it. I have to be the monster. We have to take a break on this one. I'm sorry, Ed. We'll continue this thought when we get back.
Yep.
So we're going to...
You're a corporate monster, dude.
There you go.
The corporate sector has you.
So we're going to take a commercial break here on the Marku 42's universe. When we come back, we have more on Andor here on Subspace Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more Marku 42 after this.
By the power of Grayskull, I command the Jawbridge. Open!
The Powers of Grayskull series will cover every episode of all four Masters of the Universe cartoons. Join Optimus Solo and myself, TF2 and Mike, as we tell tales of Eternia, discover the myths of Etheria, become masters in space, and finally masters of Grayskull. We'll have a commentary on the Secret of the Sword film and a few other special episodes. You can find this 125-episode-long podcast in iTunes and on the web at geekcastradio.com. By the power and honor of Grayskull, we all have the power.
Yeah, I hope I didn't miss anything exciting.
You are listening to Marku 42's Universe.
Welcome back to more of Marku 42's Universe here on Subspace Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Baumgarten. With me today are Vicky Jakubowski, Eduardo M. Fryer, and Zion Kiros. And right now, we have been talking and will continue talking about Star Wars Andor, the hit show on Disney Plus. Oh, it's a great show. And Zion, why don't you take part of the next segment?
Okay, Zion's going to get us on program.
He's going to get it. Oh, come on program. There you go. My hands are behind
my floor. Is live.
That's good, Ed. That was good. Zion?
Okay, so we've been talking about liberties and hating the Empire, essentially. And, like, so far, like, we've been talking about Andor, and throughout most of it, Andor doesn't really hate the Empire up until, like, a certain point. Like, right. he goes on the Imperial mission with the other rebels that believe in the cause. But he doesn't really believe in the cause, as he told them flat out. And then he gets stuck in Space Miami. And then the source. No, I swear that was the first thing I saw. I was like, oh my goodness, it's Miami in Star Wars.
Yeah.
We're here.
I see it.
Yeah. And then you have the stormtrooper just walking and says, "Are you with them?" And then next thing you know, he's in the Imperial prison.
Yeah.
And like, can we just talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
His arrest, air quotes, trial. You know, it also goes back to the, you know, the whole 9-to-5, you know, bureaucracy thing we were talking about at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, that stormtrooper was probably just like, crap, that guy's running. I'm too tired. Oh, this guy's talking. All right, let me just arrest him. I make my quota, you know.
Yes, the quota. That's the thing.
That's what he was going for.
He goes to get a certain quota, and then, okay, so he just fills the hole. And then boom. And like, once you think about it, it's so Empire. Like, it just blows my mind how different the show is, because it goes back to that the Empire is this giant galactic fist that you can't escape.
Yeah.
And you live by the fist, or
it punches you.
Even if you live by the fist, you're still being punched.
Yep.
And like, you know, it's really crazy. Because like, when you see his arrest, right, it's just so sudden. It's just so random. Because, like, it's something that we've never seen in Star Wars. Because we're usually used to the, hey, are you him? And then we get waved by the Jedi mind trick, and then we just move on. But what happens when you don't have the Jedi mind trick?
Mm-hmm.
See, like, now, like, this scene got me thinking. What if Obi-Wan wasn't there when Luke got stopped in a Tatooine? He's been sent to the Imperial prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but those
droids now, now we know that.
It's
not Baba, you get caught in this and that. No, you're enslaved to do whatever they want, and you don't even know what you've been building. Which I think takes us to where we are now, the Imperial prison. Now, like, I want to ask you guys, what do you guys think about that? Because it's simple in like thought process. Like of course, okay, the Empire comes at you, then you get sent to the Imperial prison. But this is something out there. Like I never expected to feel my heart go 1,000 miles per hour just sitting in a prison building the components.
Yeah.
Well, it's very the prison was very dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Because we had the whole, you know, on program, hands behind the head, and just this whole, you know, it's you know, to use that famous quote, you know, it's work will set you free, you know?
Uh-huh.
It definitely, I mean, Andy Serkis's character, which first of all, loved seeing Andy Serkis back in the Star Wars universe. Loved the fact that not only did he get to be back in the Star Wars universe, he didn't have to hide behind makeup or mocap.
I know.
Yes.
Congratulations, man. You got to actually, you know, show off your good looks. You know, he didn't have, you know, Andy Serkis's character, you know, the guy who's just like, you know, you can tell he doesn't want to be there. You can tell he hates it. But it's like,
but he's
on the other hand,
he keeps his nose clean, he'll get out of there and it'll all be fine.
I am almost done. Just deal with it.
Yes.
Yep.
And the fact is that like everything else, they've turned everything into a corporation. They've turned everything into a factory. Everything is a piece. Everything is a cog. Everything is, I mean, they found a way to manufacture a prison situation that is, and of course, because they're smug, and then they minimize their guards and they minimize everything because, well, nobody can escape. Nobody can do this. Nobody can think. Nobody can, you know, they think they've come up with a foolproof plan, which, of course, always shoots you in the foot. Yep. Never, ever rest on your laurels. You're wrong. You just are.
Yep.
And listen, folks, listen.
Yep. Well, and it's like, you know, it's kind of like, that's the thing. The great, you know, Andy Serkis's character was so great is that he started off as somebody of keep my head down.
Right.
And let's just, you know, keep my head down. Let me do what I need to do. You know, get out. But then there's that moment where he finds out the truth of, you know, about what happened to that other sector.
Right.
And it's like, oh, actually, I'm not getting out. I'm not getting out. These SOBs are just going to work me to death. You know, if I, you know, they're just going to come up with an excuse to keep me here, you know, or all it takes is one little mistake. I get transferred to another section. Oh, and these guys get killed. You know what? Screw this. Screw it.
And then he's part of that old man dying. And then he starts seeing just the futility of it all. Like even the health worker came in and said, I can't save him. I can't help him. I can't help anyone.
Right.
And just goes about.
And it just that was a gut punch.
Yeah.
Because you know there's nothing he can do for the guy. It's better to let him die peacefully than what's waiting for him, otherwise.
Yep.
And you're just whoa.
And then I think the other emotional gut punch, and I've actually seen memes of this. It's like men tears time when he finally, you know, he and Andor finally.
Yeah.
You know, have enough. They arrange a prison break.
Yeah.
And then everybody jumping off the platform. And then Andy Serkis like,
I can't swim.
It's like, he just, you know, it's like right there. It's like, oh, holy cow. He just let everything go.
Yeah.
For other people.
Yeah.
Like, he sacrificed his chance to get out so other people can get out. And it's like, oh, man. And I'm almost like, there's a part of me like, oh, please tell me in Andor Season 2 we see him again. Just, like let's close the, like, this can't be the end, you know?
You know what's something? He probably knew that he couldn't get out from the jump. Because if you remember, when they're going into the base, I mean, into the prison, I'm almost certain that they could see the water.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he knows from the jump, if I'm escaping, I can't get out.
Yeah.
But he still does it anyway. And that speech would make the doctor cry. Yeah. That's what I have to say. That speech was really crazy. Yeah. I'm glad that like they brought him back because killing off Snoke was kind of a waste for him.
Yeah.
He's too good of an actor.
Yep.
But
and,
I mean,
and he was so good in this character.
You know what? The other thing about the prison that we actually get, you know, we weren't expecting it. We get a connection to Rogue One.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because one of
at the
you know
very
one of,
end.
Yeah. Well, no, not just at the very end. One of the prisoners that was on
oh,
the same
right.
work detail.
Yeah,
yeah. Was Melshi.
That's
and it's
right.
like, oh,
the one who escaped with him off planet. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like it's one of those things.
We
that,
later
oh.
connect. Yeah, yep. You're right.
And it actually adds to it because now it's like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
Now I understand why Melshi worked
Where's
with
that
Cassian, guy? Why he joined Cassian. It's like, oh,
yeah.
he knows, like, if Cassian comes up to him and goes, look, I don't want to sit and do nothing. Melshi knows that he's legit. Melshi knows he's like, oh, Cassian wants us to go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
do it. It's the prison all over again. Let's do it.
Also, like it's something, sorry to double back to the prison, but yeah. when like they are in that like line, like waiting to like go to work, and like
yeah.
you have guys doing like sign language,
yes,
to like talk with each other, it was really really in interesting because like how else are you going to get the information across
right
away?
Right. Yep,
and like it's one thing to like know that like you're not getting out, but it's another thing to get out and then be put back in, because like that's what happened. It wasn't
yeah.
that he
yeah.
got his
that was
it,
their,
that his sentence got extended. Is that he got out, got put back in, got and told another cell, and they say, "Yo, you was in there," and then boom, sign language people just connected the wire.
And then the fact that they were
boom.
Willing to kill an entire section, but it was too late. The story was out. I mean, you know, it's like anything else. You think you can quash, but you can't.
Right.
Well, and it
out.
Also, you know, it also kind of shows off because it's like they, you know, it's interesting that the guards, none of the guards ever saw the little finger things and were like, what is going on there?
They didn't care. They thought they knew.
They don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the kill I mean, you just kind of, I mean, heck, you even kind of wonder. It even kind of makes you wonder the guards that were there, was this just like an assignment where it's like, oh, you know, here's screw up McNucklehead. Okay, you're going to be a prison guard over here. You know,
yeah.
if you do really, you know, if you, you know, kind of wonder, are they in their own little sentence?
Yeah.
Are they kind of,
right.
you know, were they kind of just sent there because it's like, okay, well, we need, you know, we need some Gometrapple. All right, Zion, we're going to send you, you're going to spend a couple of cycles helping with the prison. You know, if you do really well, you can get out and maybe we'll put you in a nice outpost.
Yeah.
You know, so they're just like, you know, and it's just like, all right. Let's see who, all right, you know what, Mark, get on that speaker. Your voice will come out all dark and booming. So they won't, you know, so just get out on the speaker, do the deep voice.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yes,
it's like,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then it's funny. As soon as he gets out the prison and, Him and the other guy from Rogue One are trying to steal the ship. They get caught, and like you have no idea what's gonna happen. And then they say it was the Empire. It was the Empire. And they're like, oh, so it's the Empire. Okay, so makes sense.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go?
Okay,
you
well,
gotta love that.
We all hate the Empire here.
Yeah.
We all hate
yes.
them.
Yep.
And I think that was that's kind of a beautiful reality is that the Empire thinks that they're instilling fear mm-hmm. in everyone. And it's really more that they're instilling more hatred.
Hatred, yeah.
Everyone dislikes the Empire, you know, except for those weird people that like the Empire that are in the
Well, it's
dog.
Well, I mean, you always, you know, well, first of all, I mean, you have the people that, you know, go to Mon Mothma's parties.
Yes.
You know, for them, it's like, well, as long as I got money in the bank.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you also have, you know, and then you also have those that, you know, please excuse the analogy, but, you know, you have those that are like, well, trains are running on time. I got nothing, you know.
Why does this sound like the real world?
because Andor is really good and it's
yeah.
It's
just it's reflecting the real world. Yeah.
Yep. And you know, going back on the thing of they tried, you know, they're thinking, oh, we're instilling fear, and instead we're instilling anger and resentment. Yeah. That's basically what Luthen wanted.
Yeah.
It's like that's why he was all like, we're gonna steal money and then they're gonna bring the hammer down. You know, he wanted them to bring the hammer down, not because, you know, he's a masochist or something.
Right.
But because he realizes they bring the hammer down, people are gonna get even more PO'd.
Ed.
Yeah.
The more you tighten your grip, the more star systems just slip.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. This movie is scripture at this point, and it's so crazy. I love it.
You know, like we're
talking about, like, about how far people will go to keep the rebellion alive, right? Throughout this series, Andor has crosshairs on his head throughout the entire rebellion.
Yeah.
Like, they're actively after him, and like it's crazy because they will kill him. Like, if you look at Luthen, and we was talking about how he'll do whatever he wants to keep the rebellion alive. He has that scene with Saul Guerrero, right? And
yes.
This is just me. This is the cameo I've been waiting for, because Saul Guerrero is my favorite character in all of this era, because he's the only one that sees it for what it is. He's seen as an extremist to everyone else, but he sees that, if we don't move now and we don't do this now, is going to be over very soon.
Also, it's like, there's like two moments, there was two moments in the series where Luthen went and spoke to Saw Gerrera, and the second time where he's like, your guy over here, he's actually my guy. And then it's like, the guy's like, no, I'm not. Saw's like, what's going on? And he's basically saying, see what I just did?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's the thing, like he saw, he's also trying to tell Saw, you also got to be careful. Because all it took for me to screw things up was just to point to one of your guys and say, he's on my payroll.
Yeah. Saw, by nature, is paranoid. And he has every right to be. He's a Clone War vet. He has every right to be paranoid. He's seen the fall.
Yeah.
But like, the thing is this, right? Luthen is of the same cloth.
Yeah.
Like you had that guy that they sacrificed because the ISB was trailing them, and they're trying to cover their other tracks. And so I was like, you're going to sacrifice 30 men. Now, I just want to take this into perspective. This is Saw Gerrera looking at you saying, are you crazy? If Saw Gerrera's doing this, you have problems. You have some serious problems.
Well, it's one of those of yes, but on the other hand, Luthen kind of sees it. Well, Luthen kind of sees it as, it's like, okay, do you sacrifice 30 to, do you sacrifice 200 to save 30, or do you sacrifice 30 to save 200?
Yeah, or the whole galaxy, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's one of those things, it's like he's playing the math, and he's like, okay, these 30 guys, this sucks, but on the other hand...
Right. It's where it makes it so... It makes it so difficult. And so, I mean, on one hand, you want to really be angry with Luthen and say that, okay, you're taking this too far. People are dying. And do we really want people dying? But then how else do you get rid of them? You have people, you have the Empire that is, they do play dirty. They have no morals. They have no care for anything but feeding the Empire.
Yep.
That's all they care about. Well, and their rank. So if they don't care, then if we try and play clean, we'll never succeed. We'll never overturn them, because they'll keep the trains running on time. They'll keep money in certain people's bank accounts. And everyone will say, oh, but it's okay. It's it's okay. It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Not to mention the sacrificing 30 people.
Right.
What it does, you know, one of the things it does, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, you know, whether we want to acknowledge this math or not, is that you sacrifice the 30, and then the Empire, you know, the guys in the Empire that were watching over this, they're happy. They're happy, and they stop looking, because they're like, well, we stopped this, yay! Let's give the report to the Emperor, and then he'll pat us on the back, and yay, we did our job. They're not like, you know, they're not going to be sitting there going, well, we stopped these guys, okay, let's keep going. No, they're going to take the win, show it off, and then meanwhile, you're off doing something else.
And it's funny, because Miro called all of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
She called every single step. And it's really cool, because now I can say this. I said when we did the Obi-Wan thing that the Empire acts like idiots, right? And here, right, the Empire is smart.
Yeah.
You have to do things correctly. You might even have to kill the guy that you work with to stay away from these guys, because they are on you.
Yep. Yep. And well, yeah, you know, even it's like, yeah, and you know, you even have, I mean, there was an Imperial officer who helped with the heist.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, even he, and it's interesting because, I mean, he's talking to subordinates and you could probably tell, it's like, he was probably thinking to himself, damn, you're a nice guy. You're probably going to have to die. Sorry.
Okay. So I think we should talk about Ferrix now.
Oof.
Okay.
Yeah, he returned because he found out that his mom died.
Yep. Yep. Which, by the way, that after he found out that his mom died, we have him looking at on the beach, looking at the sunset.
Yeah.
And a lot of people pointed out, it's like, okay, there's a bit of dark irony.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about one of the last times he saw, you know, one of the other times we saw him looking at a sunset. Or at least looking at the beach. It's like, you got to wonder, was he in Rogue One when he's with Jin on the beach, was he thinking about his mom again? Was he thinking about his adopted mom?
Huh.
Absolutely.
Was that his last thought?
Yeah.
Because he still got the plans out.
Yeah.
He.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure Marva would have been like, "Good boy."
Yes.
Good boy. Good boy, and good boy, Cassian.
But speaking about her just, too, that speech.
Oh.
Oh my gosh, that was so awesome!
Oh yeah.
Talk about a call to arms.
Oh man. Yeah. And it's like the whole it's that just that whole sequence. You have the funeral procession,
yes,
which very New Orleans. I love it.
My God, that was so good.
You know, very New Orleans. You have the funeral procession. You have, and then you have, like, the Imperial officers are there like, oh, something's going down. Something's going down. Come on. Come on, come on. Something's going down. But then it's like, you know, you have that going on. Mm-hmm. You know, the Imperial officers are like, oh. You know, let's get out there. Let's get out there. You know, and then you have the speech and just the, how do I put this? The palpable, like just the sheer palpable tension.
Yes.
As like everything's going on as they're walking. Because it's like you have the funeral procession. You have everybody gathering. You have the Imperials trying to get the stormtroopers out and be like, yes, mourn this woman, but we're still here.
Yeah.
We're still here. Don't forget. You know, you have everybody getting into place because you have Cassian getting into his position. You have Karn is like sneaking in there. You have, you know, Marva's in there. You have Lucian. Mm-hmm. You know, you have everybody. You have all the pieces flying into place.
Everyone's
so it's like
there.
What's well? It's one of those things of like you keep thinking, okay, what's the powder keg? What's the match? What is the match that's gonna light this?
When you realize that this becomes the birth of the real rebellion,
oh,
not
yeah,
the big fancy part.
Yeah,
you know, and that's very important. Do not get me wrong, but you know, you needed everyday people to go no.
Enough, yeah. And well, here's
and
the
that
thing
didn't
that
happen until this really had helped happen in other places. I don't know,
yeah,
but when it happened there and you felt, I mean, you felt the Lexington and Concord moment, you know, it just like shots were fired, whites of their eyes, bam, you know. Well,
also it's like, also the fact that there's a bit of irony in here because Marva was stirring up the crowd.
Yes.
But the spark that lit the match that popped the hydrogen balloon was the fact that you had that Imperial officer like, nope, enough. You know, if he had kept his, like, if he had kept his, you gotta wonder, if he had kept his cool, if he hadn't flown off the handle.
What would have happened?
What would have happened? Because it was him. It was his fault. It was the fault that he couldn't just be like, you know, he couldn't just let him have their little bit. He couldn't just let it go. He had to be like, no, we're not going to have anybody talking crap. No. Yep. No, we're not having any talk crap. It's like, you idiot. You moron.
And then he tries to cover the robot and does a bad job. And then he just kicks it over, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you just made yourself.
Oh, you just did it. You just did it. It's like here's the thing. It's like, here's the thing. Okay. If you do your job, like if you do your job correctly, then you can have a small amount. Like, this is also the thing about dictatorships and about authoritarian regimes. If you do your job correctly, if you're the right type of tyrant, you can have 5 people in a room of 100, and the 100 people are scared out of their wits.
Right.
Yeah.
If you do your job incorrectly, you are 5 people in a room of 100, and you are not getting out of there.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's where that Imperial officer screwed up. They had the numbers, but they were not cowed. You can't just kick. It's not kicking over the robot.
Yes.
And saying, no, we're done. Like, you don't have that.
Yes.
You do not have that. Like, sorry, not sorry.
Everything about that was, I mean, that last episode, I have to tell you, was a perfect ending to the first series.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just, everything about it was, it was magical.
Yeah.
We were rooting, you know, we were watching it in Disneyland, and we were just rooting, and we were like, oh my God, yes, and it was like, this is just amazing, and then it was over, and it's like, but okay, how long do we have to wait for season 2?
yep.
Well, way too long.
Yep. Hopefully not too long.
But so well written, so well acted.
Oh yeah.
And just brought everything together. That even if they didn't have a season 2, which I know they've already started filming, that would have been a great ending to this part of the story. We now need the final bridge that'll take us into Rogue One. Yeah. But it showed us so many arcs. We had the arc of Luthen. We had the arc of Andor. We had the arc of all these characters that were one way in episode 1, 2, or 3. And by the time we get to episode 12, they are solidified in whatever it is that they are. They are solidified.
Yep.
Bad, good, indifferent, strong. I mean, Andor is a rebel all the way.
Yeah.
What about the post-credit scene?
Oh, yeah. Oof.
That puts a really dark irony now on
guys. I hate to do this. It's the end of our show here on Subspace Radio Network, and we haven't talked about the post-credit sequence. If you want to hear about that and more, go to our podcast, The Mark Who 42's Universe Podcast, and you can hear more, including what we were about to tell you, but we can't tell you. So, that's terrible. But for those on Subspace Radio, we hope you enjoyed the show. We will see you next time. And like I said, please go to our podcast. If you're listening to our podcast, we'll be right back.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more Mark Who 42 after this.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. I'm Steve Megatron, and if you're looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of geeky topics, then check out Altered Geek. Altered Geek covers superheroes, Star Trek, pop culture, comics, film, television, animation, gaming, tech, and more. So check out Altered Geek and get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks every Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, and the Geekcast Radio Network.
We've been talking about Star Wars Andor. I'm your host, Mark Baumgarten. With me today are Vicky Jakubowski, Eduardo M. Fryer, and Zion Kiros here on the Mark Who 42's Universe podcast. Who wants to take it away? Zion?
Death Star.
Oh, yes, the post-credit scene.
That was, you know what, that, like I said, it adds a dark irony to the proceedings because it's like pretty much without intending to and without knowing, Cassian killed himself.
Because that's what they were building in the prison. Yeah.
You know, like, it's funny that, like, we keep on learning more and more about how the Death Star was made. And each piece of Rogue One has a piece in it, too. Like, mm-hmm. in Rebels, there was an episode with Saw Gerrera, and he found one of the kyber crystals that was supposed to be used for the super weapon. And he was the only one that actually thought they're building something. They're actually building something. So he actually went to Geonosis, right? Mm-hmm. And this goes to show just how wrong the Empire is, just how wrong they are. There, if you remember in episode 2, there used to be a million trillion bugs there, right?
Right.
Yeah. You go there in Rebels, there's one. And you find out that the Empire gassed them all.
Blows your mind.
Yep, they gassed him. Not just shot; they literally gassed him. And like so he's there looking for whatever they was building over Geonosis, right?
Right.
And you have the bug drawing the Death Star in the sand, literally. Right. And he's there saying, "This doesn't tell me anything." And I'm here saying, "Oh my goodness, it tells you everything."
Yes,
look, it's right there. It's just right there.
The viewers have been getting little hints through all of these series, and it just kind of shows you the insidious nature of the Empire. That and we learned even in this series in Andor, there's so many times where the Empire came in, took over a planet, took over its resources. You know, and years ago, I heard a interview with George Lucas and how he was talking about the colonizing European countries when he was writing about the Empire, when he was originally writing his story that became Star Wars. He was thinking about the colonies and he was thinking about the people uprising that were in all of these countries that were colonized by European and American countries. And, you know, even though he was part of one of those countries, you know, and what would happen if they rebelled. And of course, we've seen that happen over the last 50 plus years. And so it's fascinating when you look at the Empire and you look at all these little hints we've been given and all the things that they do and their destructive behavior and their it just, on one hand you want to go, well, yeah, nobody's that stupid, but they are. You know, you want to say, well, nobody's just going to come in and take all the resources and burn everything to the ground, but rainforest anybody.
Yeah.
You know,
it's happened
definitely. And Andor, again, brings us this, like, starkness, this reality, this holy cow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and also, you know, I go back and I think about, you know, I think about Karn and his story arc where it's like he's right. He's right to suspect there's something else going on and to investigate. Yes. And he gets smacked down.
Yes.
They're just like, dude, just stop. Like, no, don't. You're rocking the boat. Stop it. And, you know, he gets called out on it. And it's like, what happens? Because, you know, because he goes to Ferrix and the people just rebel.
Right.
You know, he gets taken to the, you know, he gets basically, you know, thrown under the bus. And then,
you know, he gets, you know, and then when he's able to get a job, you know, it's this account, you know, it's like this little accounting whatever, you know, it's this menial job, and he's trying to claw his way back up because, you know, when they took over, when the Empire took over, what did they do? They were just like, yeah, he's fired, he's fired, he's fired, he's fired, he's fired. We're just going to take everything over.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, they didn't even want to bother, like, you know, trying to do any real investigations. Just, you guys screwed up. We're in charge now. Thanks for your service. Get out.
What's really scary is that Karn is not a good guy.
Not at all.
I don't know. I mean, his love for the Empire is almost a little scary.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it needs to be this way, and I'm doing this for love of queen and country sort of thing, and and you just kind of go,
dude, you know, your lover, your lover is sour, man. Like, you got a bad lover over there, man. Just saying. And, you know, and then it's funny you should bring that up, because I'm thinking about, there was like a scene where Karn goes to the, you know, the female officer.
Right.
The one who actually, you know, shot their shot and succeeded.
Yeah.
And it's Deirdre. Deirdre, the interaction between the two when he's like outside her office or something.
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's one of those things. Like, I'm looking at the, well, first of all, I saw people going, wow, romantic tension. And I'm like, no, no, where are you getting that? No, because when he corners her outside,
have for her, but not the other way around, man.
Yeah, no. it's like here's the thing, you know, when he corners her outside her office, like I'm yelling at the TV and I'm going, dude, you got no shot.
Yeah,
you have no
stalker,
no shot, man. Like. The biggest shot you're going to get is in the head.
Yeah.
By security. Because they're going to be like, who is this freak? That's what's going to happen. Yeah. It's, but like, it's like, dude, every time you got nothing.
About something, he felt emboldened, you know? He always felt like like he was being called, like it was his destiny, you know? Mm-hmm. He never used that phrase, but I swear I heard it in his head. He was, it's my destiny, I must do this.
Didn't he also do it for revenge and to avenge?
Well, definitely there was some of that going on, too.
Just to do right.
He just shut his mom up?
It's, you know what? I think it's a little of column A, a little of column B, you know? Yeah. You know,
a lot of column C, yeah.
A lot of column C, yeah.
A taste of column D.
Yeah, no, he's doing it. He's basically doing it because he's like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I'm doing this for.
I have to say that I feel like we got so many like mini stories in this series, which was so good because it's hard to believe it was only 12 episodes.
Oh yeah.
But you know, we got to talk about the heist because that was a big deal. That was a huge thing. I mean, first of all, guess what? The Empire pays. That was the first thing that like shocked me. There's a payroll? They actually pay people?
Well, you know what? You gotta honestly, I'm not too surprised because it's like you gotta throw something. You gotta give these guys some sort of bone.
I mean, Vicky, Star Trek.
Right, I was gonna say this isn't Star Trek where there is no money. This is Star Wars. There's plenty of money, or Mon Mothma wouldn't be in trouble.
Oh, that's
right. I wouldn't have to get.
That's right.
Wouldn't have to get Tay from Mad Men to come in.
Now, suddenly we've got the great train robbery of the 19 or the 18 whatevers, and so they're going to bust in, and they're going to again. We've got another planet. Resources have been taken over. Planet is been decimated. They've got this great meteor show. They're going to use it as a cover. I feel like I've heard this story before, but this was so well done and visually stunning.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, this was like Ocean's 11, but scarier.
Yeah.
No humor in this one.
Well, and it's also it's interesting the mix.
Yes.
Of people that you had in the heist, because like you had Cassian who was thrown in at the last minute. You know, Luthen. Right.
kind of waved a check with some zeros in front of him and was like, so you want to do this? Look, looky, 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 I got money. You want money? Want money?
Yeah.
You know, you have the, you know, you have the two ladies who are, you know, right, true believers, and they're cut from Luthen's cloth. You know, if Luthen had said, oh, and by the way, when you take the money, dump the rest of the idiots, they probably would have been like, sure. Where do you
yeah,
want?
Yeah, it was absolutely.
Where do you want me to put it?
Well, it's interesting because it wasn't till later that we realized that Vel, being Martha's what, cousin,
yeah.
You know, she's a rich girl mm-hmm. who joins the rebellion, and but Cinta, whose entire family's been wiped out, of course, is, you know, she's more about the rebellion, and Vel is. It's interesting dynamics constantly. Yep. And then you've got a just interesting group of people. I don't know if I would have put them together. And yep. I'm not surprised.
Well, and you have one guy. You have one guy who's like, you have one guy who's a pure mercenary that, you know, Cassian yes. killed him. And you kind of have to wonder if an Imperial officer would have come to him and been like, right. so, hey, what can you tell me about the heist? And had either threatened torture or, like, you know, shaked a couple of gold bars okay. at him, would he have just walked? You know, would he have just been like, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, no, I was there. Yeah,
he would have, totally.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
like, I think one of the reasons that Cassian shot him was because he was afraid of him.
Yeah.
Yes. Moment. It was very quick. It was like, oh, this guy's going to totally turn on us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, Cassian was thinking, oh, yeah, no, this dude's, yeah. This dude's going to turn. We can't, you know.
Yes.
And, of course, then everyone thought that Cassian was going to turn. So
I don't think it was that they were worried Cassian was going to turn.
Oh, that he'd get caught and...
Yeah. It's one of those things right. It's like, yeah, they... Yeah, believe me, it was not, uh-oh, Cassian's going to turn. Yeah, Cassian's going to sing like a canary. No. They were just like, okay, if Cassian gets caught, he's... You know, he's gonna get tortured. So let's kill him first.
Yep. Any of those people, if they were caught, could have done that. So it wasn't just Cassian; it was the two women. You know, they could have talked too. Everyone who's in rebellion could talk. It's not fair they pulled Cassian out, pointed him out.
Well, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, though, Mark.
Huh?
Yeah, it's just that. Given, like, see, I'm pretty sure it didn't need, like, yeah, they, you know, they were saying, okay, we need to find and kill Cassian.
Right.
Look,
what makes you think there isn't somebody who's, like, watching over the two ladies?
Yeah, you're right.
Or watching over the Imperial officer who sided with the rebels in the heist?
Yeah.
Look, Cassian, Cassian said himself that he's not about the cause.
Yeah.
That's so, like, point. If he got caught, then he just say it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, all it takes, you know, it's like...
Karis, and Karis is manifest, and oh my gosh, that was so... This young man who, right or wrong, was such a true believer, and his death was like, no! Whoa, not him!
Yeah, well, but that's and yeah, but then that's also
ones, not him.
You know what? That's also kind of the unfairness of it all,
right?
It's like it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, the way these things work, it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, he was a true believer. He had the manifesto. His writing was like, holy cow, man! You could be the mouthpiece, for the rebellion, and you'd bring people in, but. You know, that's the thing about these things. You know, when you do a rebellion, when you do a war, it doesn't care. It does not care.
No.
You know, this is not about, you know, this is not about, you know, this whole thing. It's, you know, it's not about, oh, well, you know what? You're a true believer and you got a manifesto and you're preaching to, you know, you're preaching out, you're going to survive. It's,
right.
You know, when that bullet, you know, the bullet that has your, you know, it's not, you know, there was another, this is something else, but the way it goes is it's, you know, don't worry about the bullet that has your name on it. Worry about the dozens of others that simply just say occupant.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing. The blaster shot that got him, it just said fill in the blank.
I was amazed with the entire heist because I wasn't sure if they were going to be successful. When we're going through the heist and it felt like one of after another was dying or being severely harmed, you know, when we get to the end and essentially there's four of them because Karis dies and then Andor kills Skeen.
Yep.
Cinta goes off. And I mean, the whole thing was just like, dang. Yep. This was pretty intense. And okay, they were successful and it did everything that everyone was hoping that this would do. It did it. Got the money, got the notice, got the anger, everything that everyone wanted to happen. It happened. I mean, it certainly had the effect that people were hoping for.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
What did thing happen to Ferrix after the whole thing that happened?
Oh, yeah.
I gave you guys a good idea through another example.
Well, okay. I'll say this. I mean, we do have one more season of Andor, which might answer the question, though.
Do we only have one more season? Is it yep. only two
yes.
seasons?
Yeah, it's only yeah. two seasons.
And they've actually said that
it's going to start a year from this last episode.
So instead of 5 years before A New Hope, it'll be 4 years.
Yeah, although I suspect, because I remember hearing that season two of Andor was going to end leading into Rogue One.
Yes, but it's going to start at least mark. A year after this one ended. And they've already started filming it.
Speaking of time, I know you wanted to say something, Zion. Speaking of time, how long was he on Narkeena 5?
I'm not sure.
In prison? 'Cause
I want to say a few months.
It had to be, so not a year. So it wasn't, because I was thinking, could it be a year? But then I was like, no, I guess it wouldn't have been. Because I know the first time segment that went by was a month. And then more, so I don't know. I wish we knew where we were in the timeline.
I feel like he spent at least maybe a couple of months.
Couple of months, okay.
I think it was a couple of months.
Okay.
Because I want to say that, yeah, he spent, it was at least a couple of months, maybe even half a year.
And his money was still in the hiding spot in the hotel room a half a year later.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, well, you know, some hotel rooms don't clean that much.
Cleaning staff, you're not clean, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Well, either that or he's a good hiding, you know, he's good at hiding stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's.
They don't always clean on the tops.
There you go. All right, Zion, you were going to say something. Go ahead, Zion.
Okay. So, in Rebels, right?
Uh-huh.
The main character Ezra Bridger,
right.
is from this planet called Lothal, and his parents were Empire opposers, vocal ones at that, and they went missing. And so, first season goes by, and essentially he does the same thing that Andor's mom did. Send a message out to the city or the planet giving hope. We can beat the Empire, but we need to do it now.
Mm.
Right? And next season's is locked down. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah, like
Wasn't it locked down already? It was kind of locked down already.
It was locked down to, like, a level 5. But then, like, when they went back, it was like level 10. It was unrecognizable.
I
as
can
what
see
he,
the
he said,
Empire coming in and making an example because they like to do that and basically decimating. And,
yeah,
and
I think Ferrix being gone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the planet, okay, the planet itself, yeah, is probably going to be locked down. But as far as Cassian's hometown, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if when we next see it, it's gone.
Well, that's why we got the main characters out of there on the ship.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, but here's the thing, though. Because Bix,
yeah.
It did, like, the fact that she was like, no, I have to stay here. They'll be mad. It's like, oh, boy.
Yeah, she's not well anymore. She's in trouble.
Nope. Well, and here's the other thing. Here's the other thing that gets scary. if they were to find her wherever she hides out, is she gonna, you know, are they gonna come up to her and just be like, "Hey, Bix," and is she gonna just, is her mouth gonna open and just not close?
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, wow.
Because I mean, whatever they did, it screwed her up. I mean, we're beyond like PTSD. Right. We're beyond talking PTSD. It's like, are we sure? You know, are we sure she can be trusted?
You know, like the scene where they break her mind is really off the wall, because like we're all watching Star Wars here, and we know it, right? So like, yeah. If the Empire comes in and says, "Okay, we are going to discuss something that you don't want to talk about," the first thing that's going to come to mind is the Imperial droid that they tried to make Leia talk with. Right?
I was going
to
bring that up.
Yeah. That's the easy go to. But then we get the Mind Flayer machine, which is a lot more violent and a lot more brutal.
Yep.
Just a syringe.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, here's the thing, because we got the ITO, which is supposed to be a giant, you know, this big torture ball with like all sorts of, you know, if the essential guides are still correct, it basically just has a whole bunch of little syringes and probes and electrical thingies. But this one, like the whole the device that got used on her, you know, you could tell these guys are not using state-of-the-art stuff.
Oh no,
this is not state-of-the-art. This is, well, I got this little device, I've tested it out, it, you know, I think it could work, let's give it a shot, you know.
Yeah.
Plus, don't forget, Princess Leia was a different level of prisoner.
Oh yeah.
And although it sounds funny, they are going to treat the different levels of prisoner, even Princess Leia, they're going to treat her differently, because they're going to keep that in mind, and the Emperor may not want someone of her level to be treated that way, even they're going to later blow up her planet. Mm-hmm. You know, you see things like that, and it makes no sense because it's the Empire. But they're going to treat different people different ways, and they'll treat certain classes of prisoners much dirtier, much more awful. And who knows, maybe the Empire gets some semblance of a compassion. No, I can't say that.
Well, no, I don't think it was compassion so much as it's,
she actually doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
So we've done what we've done. So, well, we're just going to leave it here.
That's true.
Yeah. No, it's hey, you know, we, yeah, it's.
And if you remember, you had that scene where the Imperial technician is setting it up. And then you had that really, really bad, creepy backstory about it.
Yep.
Yeah. That was definitely just gave shivers up my spine, even though you can't really hear what's going on. They kind of give you this little, you know, what you can hear through the headphone sort of thing. It just, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it just kind of gave me this like creep vibe. I'm like, oh, really? Nice. No, thank you.
The Empire is actually scary here, which is, yep, I think what makes it,
yes, they are,
stand out. Like, we're usually used to looking at the Empire and saying, "What are you doing?" But now we're saying, "Please stop."
Yep. Yeah. No. And it's, and it's kind of like, you know, and it's this, just this whole, I mean, we're two steps away from like, we're like two steps away from, I'm thinking like, what was it? I'm thinking like Princess Bride. I'm thinking of like Christopher Guest when he's all like, you know, talking and being like, you know, well, this is, you know, we're trying this out, you know, this is for science. What did it do to you? You know?
You know? No, it just, and Deidre's level of evil. And how she's so even killed, you know, she's not twirling the mustache. She's just like, okay, so we're going to do this. We're going to be really, really mean. And we're going to be really awful. And we're just going to do this. And okay, this is fun. Okay, thank you, bye.
Well, no, and it's like, here's the thing. Because it's like, for her, I mean, yeah, she's not twirling the mustache. She's not doing this to be evil. It's actually more banal than that. It's,
yes.
This went down. I need answers. You know, instead of just being like, you know, and it's just like, hey, I need answers. So we're going to use this machine on you. And whenever you feel like, you know, talking to us, just let me know. Let me know what you want to say.
She is really good at her job.
God, isn't she?
Yeah. Regardless of what it is, which is kind of weird to say.
Yep.
Like, she's just straightforward at it. No monologues. No.
Yeah,
terrible base.
Well, because that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the thing. Yeah, no monologues, because it's like, she's all business. She's all business. It's, you know what?
Yeah.
I got a job to do. I, you know, your acquaintance, boyfriend, whatever he is, you know, if I'm off the mark, please let me know. You know, he's doing some stuff. He's doing some stuff, and we want to put a stop to it. So, you know, anything you want to tell us right now. Oh, you say you don't know anything. Well, you know, you seem like a sweet enough lady. I don't believe you. So let's try again.
Didn't you guys hear about the thought process about the fans thinking about the droid B2 being K2SO?
Oh, I've not heard that one.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting because, like, once you think about it, what's the point of the droid being there? It's just there, right? But, like, it has an ample amount of lines.
I don't know. The droid
has a really good amount of lines. And they didn't really destroy it. And so, I don't know. And also, like, if you want to go even further, they came out with a special two-piece set with it and Cassian for the Black Series. So the droid means something.
I think that the droid will continue to be important. And, you know, the droid was... I don't know. The droid was kind of like a Greek chorus to me. Would be talking about...
It was the new R2-D2 C-3PO.
Yes, but didn't have a practical purpose where the other ones did also.
Well, right.
Well, actually, no.
Kind of did. Recorded messages
and
helped get things through.
Well, it did. Well, the other thing we had is it did have... don't forget that we did have a... K2 series droid at Space Miami.
Space Miami.
We had one in Space Miami. So, and you know, I actually had this joke. I joked with Trish. What if wouldn't it be, you know, we actually joked. It's like, wouldn't it be cool? Come, you know, Andor season 2. If it turns out the droid that was like grabbing him by the throat turns out to be
K2, that would be funny.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Yeah,
the irony.
You know, yep. They speaking about K2, they re-released Rogue One prior to season 1. So like now around, since they're coming around to season 2, I really hope that they re-release it again after season 2. Because now I promise you this, if you watch Rogue One, even now, is Jyn Erso is no longer the main character. It's now Cassian's movie.
I could see that. Okay.
It's now Cassian's movie. At least from a main character point of view, because we still don't know anything about Jyn. And in terms of the point of movie, she's just thrown in there. Everything that's built up to the point now, Cassian included, this movie is the final step in it.
Right.
So, like, you are now going to focus more on Cassian and other things rather than just random Jyn, which is kind of weird to say.
You know, and also, I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, it also puts, you know, you now find yourself like, okay. What, you know, there's things that he said, things that happened that you're like, okay, now, you know, it puts it puts it in a different context. You know, especially like when he was talking to Jin and he's like, the things I've had to do.
Right.
Mm.
And now we really understand those. Because we were just thinking that in terms of what little we saw in Rogue One, and it seemed like he was very cutthroat. I mean, he's Luthen in Rogue One. When you think about it.
But then also, like, you have that part when I'm they're doing the raid, and he's saying this isn't gonna work. But then you go back to Rogue One, and he has that line saying, "We can make an army of 10 feel like 100."
Yep.
Yeah. So what do we think's gonna happen in season 2? What do we hope to see happen in season 2?
Well, I don't know about hope. I don't know about hope exactly, but I would not be surprised if we get more of, like, you know, we get maybe him growing more into the Cassian that we saw in Rogue One. You know, the kind of cynical, person who's like, you know, willing to do, you know, who's willing to kill somebody, right. You know, just off, like, because remember, the first thing we see in Rogue One, first thing we see of Cassian is he shoots, like, his contact has a freak out and he just shoots him down.
Yeah.
Like in cold, you know, in cold blood. So
he doesn't
you know,
to stop.
Maybe more of that, because last we saw of Cassian in the first season of Andor is him going up to Luthen and just being like, you know, hey, you know,
take me in.
Yeah.
So it's like, now what more lessons is he going to learn at the feet of Luthen?
Well, I kind of suspect we're going to see more of the formation of what we come to know of as the Rebellion, because we've got some ideas. We've got all these little ragtag little groups, and I think we're going to see them come together, because, you know, one of the things that strikes you is, what struck me as interesting is there's virtually no discussion of the Force in Andor.
Right. That's
good. And it's very big in the Rebellion. So where do we switch, where we go from being the Rebellion being connected with the light side of the Force and the Rebellion being what we see it in Andor? And so where are we going to connect? I assume that we're going to see a lot more connection going on.
Yeah. Well,
we have to wait for Luthen to get out of the picture for that to happen.
I suspect too.
Maybe. I mean, also, you know, also it's like, it'd be interesting to see, like, in, you know, one of the things with season 2 and its lead into Rogue One.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing also, because, like, Mon Mothma's, like, very much, she's still trying to, you know, yeah, play by the rules. She's still, right. You know, trying to do as they'd say, you know, Queen's rules, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
I feel like, because in Rogue One, we see her in Yavin 4, you know, she was on the Rebel Cruiser in Return of the Jedi. So it's like, I feel like there needs to be that bit where, you know, she's got to walk away. She's got to leave the senator, you know, mingling with people at parties while, you know, working stuff when their backs are turned, to being, you know, the rebel leader who comes in and motivates people to take down the second Death Star and mourn a ton of Bothans who lost their lives to make it happen.
You see, I want to see the same thing, but instead of seeing her walk, I want to see her run with the tail between her legs as the Empire's chasing her. Because it just fits so much more to me. But that's just
that,
me.
You know what? That may be what it is. You know, that, I mean, you know, we're, you know, it's, who knows? She may have to run with her tail between her legs. She may have to have her hat in hand and ask Luthen or Saw, you know, can you take me in? You know, things have gotten bad. Who knows?
I wanted to say my hope. Well, I mean, Zion, this is because it ties in with all this. My hope, it won't happen, but my hope is that Mon Mothma stops the wedding between her daughter and Scolding's son. Because I think that's a step too far for her, regardless. Yes. Knowing her character later, that's a step too far, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Here's the thing, though. Because here's the thing, Mark. The thing that we have to get to, the wedding. But what I'm saying is, we have to get to the wedding to that point. But it's like, do we get to a point where we have something to call off? I'm saying.
I'm seeing that you're right. I think the wedding will get ready to happen, and then she will stop it. And then maybe that's when she has to run with her tail.
Or we don't even get to that point where she has to stop a wedding. Maybe, you know, somewhere along the line, something happens and there is no wedding.
But it's more exciting if we got to the wedding and they called that. That would be exciting, and this is an exciting show. So I want to see
it. It is, but on the other hand, you know, we're also, one of the things about the Disney Plus shows is, you know, defying expectations.
That's true.
So, you know, again, just, you know, sitting here and thinking, oh, yeah, that wedding would be exciting.
Wait a minute, Ed. If we're defying expectations, the wedding happens.
Yep. Yeah.
Then the wedding happens.
Well, so I mean, come on. We all want to see what a wedding would look like.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had... The closest we've ever had to a Star Wars wedding is when Amidala and Anakin eloped.
Yeah, that's an elopement.
And then, in comics and stuff, we've had the wedding of Leia and Han.
But that wasn't the same thing.
Different media.
But we've never actually seen. Yeah, so it would be interesting, and you know, who knows? And you know, again, also maybe, maybe unfortunately, Mon Mothma's daughter or the kid she's being sold off to, you know, maybe
that's what it is.
I don't know. Maybe one of them doesn't even make it alive.
Yeah.
Was it the daughter's choice to follow that tradition? So it wasn't really Mon Mothma didn't have
to do much.
I
felt like it was, because I don't feel like she was not happy about that tradition.
Right.
But the daughter was doing that. And then, you know, the fact that she had to do the introduction, which clearly is part of that tradition, and she didn't want to do it, but she kind of had no choice.
Yep.
Okay.
That makes sense. Nothing about it was good. Nothing about it was great. Nothing about it was fair. And as a mother, I don't know if I could still have gone through with that. But, you know, when you've got the Empire staring at your bank records, what do you do?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And, the other thing is, anybody think that Mon Mothma's hubby will be breathing by the time we get to the end of Andor season 2?
No. Probably not.
I'm not sure he'll be breathing on episode 1.
Zion, you were going to say something.
Yeah. What I hope for is just to keep things as they are, really. This is perfect. This is what I've waited for. When Rogue One came out, I wasn't sure how I felt about it, because if you remember, this was the first movie that we've gone without John Williams. So it was clearly Star Wars, but it didn't feel like Star Wars, at least to me at that point. Now, since we've been used to without John Williams and everything, now I get to sit down and watch Rogue One again and then watch this and say, this is Disney's peak. This is what they're good at. They're good at Mando, yes, but this is a cut above the rest. Like, I just hope that not even just getting to Andor, that every other series coming forward looks at this and says, we have to match this quality. Because if you was to watch Obi-Wan and Boba Fett after watching Andor, it feel a drop in quality. Not saying they're bad, but it's a clear drop in quality. And I don't want to see any lightsabers. because this feels like a return to form to me. But this is just me. I find episode 4 to be aesthetically different than 5 and 6. Like, it's more dirty. It's less futurish. It's very dirty, dingy, and it's just very oppressive. Okay, we are running from the Empire. They boarded our ship. Now we got to go to go through the Imperial blockade. Now we got to go through the Imperial checkpoint. Han Solo is talking about getting boarded. We got caught by the tractor beam. We got away, but they're actually following us. It's just the oppressiveness is what I've come for. And I just hope that they just go forward.
Also, to me, you know, I agree with you, Zion. I'm hoping that, you know, as much as it would have been cool to have, you know, as much as it's cool having, Admiral Akbar telling the Rebel fleet, may the Force be with us, and, you know, Raditz being, may the Force be with you, Rogue One. There's just something about having, you know, seeing this period of time where there are no Jedi.
Right.
Where the Jedi are just something talked about, like, in conversation of, like, weren't there guys with laser swords running around? I think they're gone.
Right. That was just a fairy tale my mom used to tell.
Yeah, you know, or just like, I think I saw one guy once. I don't know. His name was Quiji or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. On that note, we're going to be ending the show here on the Mark Who 42 Universes podcast. Any last words, folks?
Watch Andor. It's so great. And I can't wait for season 2.
Oh, yeah. Bring on season 2.
You know, we've only started talking about this. There's so much more that we didn't talk about that you have to see.
Well, you know, it's... What can we say?
Zion, any last words?
You may fire when ready.
It's a trap. All right, folks. We're going out of here. Thank you to Eduardo M. Fryer, Vicky Jakubowski, Zion Kiros, and thanks to myself, Mark Baumgarten. We will see you next time here on the Mark Who 42's Universe podcast. Don't forget, 5 times a week on Subspace Radio Network. Listen to us there, and always come for the extended version here. Bye, everyone. May the Force be with you.
And we've been asleep, but it's time to wake up.
Thanks for listening to Mark Who 42's Universe with hosts Mark Baumgarten, Eduardo M. Fryer, Zion Kiros, and Vicky Jakubowski. This program was produced and directed by Mark Baumgarten. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please go to our Facebook page or email us at markwho42s.universe@gmail.com. You can listen to old shows at our website, markwho42.com, or even our YouTube page, markwho42.
Mark Who 42's Universe, copyright 2022.